I'm Brandon Bartnick, and this is the Future of Mobility Podcast.
The Future of Mobility Podcast is focused on the pursuit of safe, sustainable, effective, and accessible transportation of goods and people. Given the critical nature of the world's climate and energy needs, these topics have never been more important, and they're certainly important to me. So, this podcast is a weekly interview series in which I learn from and put the spotlight on the people helping to develop and implement the technology required to move us forward. Who am I? As mentioned, my name is Brandon Bartnick, and I'm an engineer who realized that making a positive impact is the most important thing to me, both through this podcast and my career in the industry. If you're passionate about any of the topics I cover here, please feel free to reach out on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to connect. Also, if you hear anything you like, please consider sharing the Future Mobility with a friend or colleague. This podcast is brought to you by Edison Manufacturing and Engineering. Technology innovation is great, but it doesn't mean anything if we can't bring our impactful products to life, which means we have to build them. And unfortunately, that's easier said than done, especially for startups and evolving companies that need a reliable option for low-volume builds. That's where we come in. Edison is your turnkey manufacturing partner, specializing in build and assembly of highly complex products in annual volumes of 10 to tens of thousands, utilizing an agile and capital-light approach. If you need a trusted manufacturing partner, then please visit us at edison-mfg.com or feel free to reach out to me directly at brandon.bartnick@edison-mfg.com or by visiting my LinkedIn page, Brandon Bartnick. Now to this week's episode. Today's guest is Matt Markle. Matt is CEO of Spartan Radar, which is a radar technology startup based in Southern California. Next-generation mobility sensor provider with extensive experience in radar, digital signal processing, and antenna design. So, talking about radar today, and really interesting discussion. So, radar, I think, is unheralded sensor within the autonomy stack, and it's fun talking with Matt about the operating foundational principles for radar. Also, the role in autonomy, the importance of using and getting the most out of radar to develop and deploy a cost-effective autonomy solution, and also how he's thought about leading Spartan in a sustainable way, and sustainable as in a commercially viable and sustainable way, right? So autonomy, we've seen a lot of volatility in the market. It's been a challenge for a lot of companies, and many of them haven't made it. So how do you think about navigating this dynamic environment? That's a good chunk of what we talk about here. So I'll leave it here for now. Please enjoy this conversation with Matt Markle. Today I'm joined by Matt Markle. Matt, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Brandon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to this conversation. I think the positioning and the work that Spartan Radar is doing is, I think, underrepresented to some extent in the industry. And I think there's a lot I'm excited to unpack here. So would you mind starting by just giving a quick introduction of yourself and what you are doing with Spartan?
Sure. I'm Matt Markle. I've been the CEO at Spartan Radar since July of 2023, so coming up on a year. And yeah, I joined the company to do two things. One is to really help focus the technology. And second is to help cross the chasm as you move from an R&D stage into selling products and generating revenue and doing all the things that businesses need to do to survive. A quick overview of my career, I spent almost 30 years in defense doing a lot of really cool radar and electronic warfare things, both on the helping out on the government side and doing even some time in the Air Force Research Lab and their special projects. And then the last thing I did was about 7 years with Raytheon Space and Airborne Systems in El Segundo, California, working for their chief technologist and also being the tech director for a P&L that was focused on advanced electronic warfare activities. So it's a really cool radar and electronic warfare things there. Made a pivot in 2017 and joined a brand new company called Waymo, which had just spun out of Alphabet, and ended up leading their radar team and all their radar R&D. My team was the one that put the radars on the Jaguar I-PACE. So all the Jaguar I-PACEs that are out running around right now looking really cool and doing great and wonderful things, That was my team that made the radar, the imaging radar for that. And then I left that in 2021 and built a radar division for another company called Ghost Autonomy. They've recently, I think, gone under, but the radar technology group there was like really, really solid. So we were doing some cool things with that. And then that takes me up to where I am with Spartan today.
Yeah, and so maybe that's the obvious next question. Okay, why Spartans? What's interesting about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, you get to the point in your career where you can almost do anything. You know, you really have to find the right time or the right opportunity to spend your time on, because there's more good opportunities than there is time in the day. So the reason I chose Spartan was a couple of reasons. One, it was a really, really good fit between me on the technology side and on the corporate leadership side to be able to come in and have both of those pieces. I knew the space really well. I knew the radar technology really well. I actually knew several of the members of the company, several of the leadership team there. A lot of them worked for me when I was at Raytheon. So I knew the company pretty well, and I've been kind of tracking them throughout their history. And the second thing is that they're working on problems that are extremely important to me. And those fall into two buckets. One is on the passenger car side. When you think of the number of lives that we still lose every year on the road in the United States, it's around 43,000, right? So give or take a few hundred. So 43,000. And people don't know whether that's a big number or a small number. They just know that that's a number until you put it in perspective. Humans aren't really good at absolutes, but they are good at relative things. So to put this in terms of something that's relative, that's about the same number that we lose every year due to breast cancer. So we lose the same many people on the road as we do due to breast cancer. And everyone knows that most of the accidents, I think NHTSA's numbers are like 94-ish, something like that, are caused by human error. So if we can do something to take a bite out of those lives lost, that just makes a lot of sense. And that's the claim to fame of a lot of the folks that are working in the autonomy industry. And it's also a lot of folks are working in the driver assist and enhanced driver assist features as well. So that's one thing. The mm-hmm. second thing is, like, for all the stuff that's gone into the passenger car safety things, all with NCAP and so forth, with all of that, we haven't seen that make its way nearly enough into commercial vehicles. So commercial vehicles is everything that's other than like what you and I would drive. So it can be class 8, it can be last mile delivery, it could be construction, agriculture, mining, forestry. It could be material handling, things like forklifts and scissor lift trucks and so forth. So all of those are areas that need safety as well and need these systems. But the investments in pass car have not really made it into them yet for a variety of reasons. And that's mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that Spartan's working on as well.
Yeah, both industries definitely. There's tons of opportunity. One of the, just touching on the passenger car stat, right? The only thing that I think is more mind-boggling to me that we have 43,000 people per year dying on the roads is the fact that we just accept that, right? So like the fact that we just, even like, so like people think about it and says, yeah, just a reality of having our highway ecosystem or whatever, of like, we just let a bunch of people die because like it's insane. So like I think that that gets talked about, but I think it's still so understated of like, this is a massive problem. That, of course, we're working through the kinks as different companies try to solve the safety problem, whether it's from an autonomy or an assisted driving perspective or whatever. But like, it's worth the effort because the prize on the back end is so important.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been thinking about that a little bit. You know, why is that? Why do we just accept those lives lost versus do all the things that we do for example, breast cancer, right? I mean, Susan G. Komen. October Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We're pink.
Yeah, not to several... minimize breast cancer, right?
No. But you know, I've got several golf shirts that have the you know the pink ribbon on there, and that's and it's we actually have instances of that in my family. So yeah, mm-hmm. That's huge. But why do we just accept it on the roads? And I think Brandon, it's actually because most of the people don't see a clear path towards how a solution could be possible, right? So they've seen what we've done with the plague. They've seen what we've done with polio. They've seen what we've done mm-hmm. with with several other diseases that we develop vaccines for, inoculations, and then basically the disease sort of goes away over time. Smallpox, et cetera, all those things we develop a fix for. But I don't think that the average person really sees a way to fix it, and therefore they kind of are just forced to sort of accept it. And I think that with when we start thinking about things like autonomy and really making cars and passenger cars and light trucks safer, that when we start socializing that as like this can truly save lives and lots of them, then people will start demanding that a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, the abstraction and the complexity of the problem is definitely a contributor. It's something that I find myself regularly reflecting on, like when I'm going down the expressway driving to work. Like, this is one of the riskiest things that I'm going to do, but it's crazy how I feel no risk at all, right? Like, and some things that are not risky at all feel super risky. There's definitely a cognitive disconnect there. But so transitioning to Spartan Radar's role within, so right, we're solving these meaningful problems, whether it's improving on-road safety, improving effectiveness, and the how well our supply chains work, things like that. What's the role of radar? And let's assume someone listening realizes, okay, you have a sensor suite, radar, LiDAR, camera on a lot of, at least autonomous vehicles, but there's more to it than this. What is the role of radar and Spartan Radar's role in improving this ecosystem?
So let's talk about radar just in general, and then we'll talk about how Spartan fits into this picture. And we'll focus more on like the autonomy aspect right now. So when you think about that, first of all, I drive cars a lot, and I have two optical sensors and a pretty big computer that I use, you know, my eyes and my brain that I use to drive with. So there's no necessity.
You don't have the radar function, right?
Yeah, well, I think my car has well, my car's a little bit older. It may not even have a radar on there. It has some ultrasonics that, you know, for backing up, but it's but it doesn't have the AEB or anything like that. So or the ACC adaptive cruise control. So, but it's a cool car. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's like a cool, you know, Lexus convertible, but it's kind of a little bit older. So it's got all these, it doesn't have all these, you know, super cool features and stuff. So when you think about, you know, what can radar bring, remember that we don't need really anything other than cameras and a giant computer, right? Because that's what humans do. But we know that it's going to take a long time to really get to the level of human autonomy with just optical sensors and the giant computer. And we probably can't afford, at least right now, to put the giant computer in a vehicle, at least not in a vehicle that at least I can afford. So we have to think of some other things. We have to think of like, what are the other sensing modalities? I'm a huge fan of radar and camera together for autonomy, because I think that that's an affordable alternative that can solve, you know, basically just about everything that you would need. And it's and radar and camera, oh my gosh, they're just like it's the greatest marriage of sensors. I often call it the Reese's peanut butter cup of sensing, because the Reese's peanut butter cup is of course chocolate and peanut butter, and they work so well together, especially the dark chocolate ones. They work so well together, and that's what radar and camera do. The radar
is that because the failure modes are separated.
Yeah, if you look at where one is strong and where one is weak, they are almost, you know, exactly complementary. So the cameras can't tell range at all. They just can't tell the range of something. They can try to infer it through some different mechanisms like AI training and looking at like, well, I think that's a Honda Civic and it's this many pixels and I've trained on Honda Civic, so it's maybe this far away. And it could be a reflection. It could be something else. It could be whatever. So they can get fooled by that. Radars measure range, you know, really accurately. They also measure velocity really, really accurately. Actually, velocity is the thing that radars measure, these automotive radars measure the most accurate of all. So that they can instantly tell, you know, not only how fast something's going, but very, very quickly tell you whether it's changing its velocity as well. So whereas cameras can't do that at all. Cameras have the best spatial resolution of any sensing mode out there today. You know, better than radar, better than lasers, better than, you know, so it's really better than microphones. Cameras are really, really have the best spatial resolution. Cameras don't work in the dark. Radar works fine in the dark. Cameras don't work so well in fog or rain. The radar works fine in both of those. There's a little bit of some attenuation, some other effects we have to deal with in very heavy rain. But basically, the radar's pretty much impervious to those sorts of things for the ranges that we're talking about. So those two sensors work really well together. And what you want for autonomy also is you want to have a redundant sensing mode. So you're going to have cameras because you've got to tell the color of the stoplights and things like that. So is your next one going to be laser, or is the next one going to be radar? Or, and I think from what I see on a lot of things, a really smart thing to do is to have that be a radar, because the areas that that cameras suffer in terms of the weather, the lasers often suffer in those as well. Fog is pretty detrimental to those. And I think that there's, when you think of like some of the other adjunct applications as well, when you get dust kicked up a lot, that's not really great for lasers either. Mm-hmm. And radar does just fine in that. So now you might want to use all three, but that's a business decision. That's not a must have from a technology standpoint. It's a business decision. And that's what we had at Waymo, was we had all three of those, because we figured that by throwing all these sensors on there, pretty much cost be damned, throw all these sensors on there, that will give us the most data possible, and we can write the right amount of neural nets, and then we can get to market faster. But that doesn't mean that you can't do it with just a camera and a radar. So that's what I see radar doing in terms of the autonomy space. Is it pairs so well with camera and allows you an affordable alternative to a super expensive robo-taxi stack.
And can I pick on, so going a bit deeper here, right? So you mentioned lights or cameras the best at spatial recognition. Radar mm-hmm. doesn't thrive there. Cameras not very useful at night. Not that it's useless, but like it's much worse at night. Radar is good at night.
Right.
So you have, imagine you just have radar camera. You're at night, so the camera is not as effective as usual. You are missing then that optimal spatial recognition piece. And this is just picking on a couple of things here. Like, is the solution here that's good enough and you can work with that? Or is it maybe from a cost optimization and a business perspective, you just don't operate in those types of situations and you work where the two sensors, like, how do you think about that?
Well, so for one, it depends on the use case, of course, right? If you are most of the time humans, so humans can't see at night either, right? So we need something to light it up. So you have headlights mm-hmm. that you can use in that situation. And oftentimes you'll have the headlights of other vehicles as well. And when you fuse that with the radar, that can fix a lot of the issues on the radar not having the greatest spatial resolution. So
gotcha.
I think go ahead.
No, go ahead. I had a related question, but
I was going to say the one area that Spartan is playing in this field, by the way, is in improving spatial resolution for radars. So that's one of the areas that we're trying to help out, and is to use our expertise, our software layers to basically, we're not going to get all the way up to lasers or cameras, but we're trying to make the radar a lot better there.
And I think that's a good transition. But before we get there, I don't want to go too deep here, but would you mind, just in case anyone's not familiar, just from an operating principle, how does radar work on the camera?
Sure. So, how does radar work in general? Radar's an active sensing modality, meaning that it's going to put energy into the channel or into the environment, and then look for the reflections from that energy it's put in there. And from those reflections, it's going to determine what it wants to determine: the presence of things, the absence of things, where they are, how well they're moving, how many things are out there, etc. So it's actively putting typically pulsed energy into the environment, and then with what it receives, it does a lot of signal processing to pull cool stuff out of all this stuff that's coming back, and allow you to say, that there's somebody here at 50 meters going 20 meters per second, there's somebody over here, you know, at some range and some angle and some velocity and so forth, and pull all that together. Here's an area where there's nothing. And I'm sure that there's nothing there because we can do that with the radar. It's called free space estimation. Here's an area where I don't see anything, but I may not be so sure because I might be blinded in that area. There might be something very large in front of me that I can't see, that I might not be able to see behind. Or there might be some other, not to get too technical, and it might be some other artifacts in the scene that cause the radar to be a little bit desensitized in that area, similar to like the way a retro reflector for lasers will cause the laser to be desensitized.
Yeah, and I think so. I think that's a good place to go into. So, what Spartan's doing here, and if I understand correctly, right, it's not, you're not selling a radar and a hardware. You're doing something other than that. So, what is Spartan Radar doing in this ecosystem?
So, it's important when you think of Spartan Radar to kind of bifurcate a little bit in terms of the two sides of the business, and we should probably talk a little bit about why do we have two sides of the business as a startup. You know, you should be solely focused on one thing and then improve that out and then go on to something else. And like, I've been such a staunch advocate for these two sides of the business. But for the side of the business that focuses on passenger cars and pass car autonomy and those sorts of things, what we make is, we don't make any hardware. And that was actually a decision we consciously made, actually, before I even joined the company, and it's an extremely wise. We don't want to compete in the automotive radar hardware space. It's, first of all, we're not set up to be with the supply chain to compete with those that are very, very entrenched in that field and have been doing this for a long, long time and are currently producing millions and millions and millions of units a year. We're just not set up to compete in that space. And we realize that. But what we can do is we can be complementary. We can offer to either tier ones, which are the people that make the radars and then sell into the car makers, the OEMs. We can sell directly into the OEMs, or we could sell into the silicon providers. We can sell our software into them so that it makes whatever radar they're using better. If you think back to like the BASF commercials from the 2000s, where like, we don't make the products you buy, we make the products you buy better. That's really what Spartan does with our radar software, is it's designed to improve the one area of radar that's the weakest, and that's the spatial resolution. So our software can do somewhere between we typically see, and others have characterized for us, between a 3 and 8 times increase in spatial resolution. So and spatial resolution typically goes with the size of the antenna. So basically for a certain size antenna, a certain size package, we get something that's between 3 and 8 times effectively larger just with our software layer.
And when you say spatial resolution, could you unpack that term as well, please?
Sure. That's the ability to see. It's the ability to see that there are two things there versus just one. It's if you think of optically, it's equivalent to the pixel size. So think back to, you know, maybe 20 or so years ago, 20, 25 years ago, when like the first megapixel camera came out, right? So it had the same field of view, but it was basically gridding that up into 1 million pixels. Well, now we have when we look at cameras, we have the same field of view. We might have 24 or more million megapixels, like million pixels. So we've taken and the same field of view, but we've gridded it up so that the pixels are much, much smaller. There's two things that this adds. Number one is let you see if there are really two things there. That's very useful in some situations. It's actually typically that spatial resolution is often one of the characteristics that's specified when OEMs talk to tier ones, like, we want a spatial resolution of 1 degree or 2 degrees or whatever that number is.
So would this tell you, I mean, so say you're, if you don't mind, when say you're driving, you see pedestrian, a person or people at a certain spot, like, better spatial resolution will allow you to more quickly figure out if that's one or three people. Right. Is that?
Or, yeah, exactly. And there's another factor that comes in too, is when you have something that is small, like a pedestrian, next to something that's larger, what happens is a lot of times if they're both in the same pixel, all it sees is the larger one, and it will and will associate where that is, basically to where the larger one is. So you'll actually miss things.
If someone's popping their head around a truck to see if they can pass, like, you wouldn't know that there's a pedestrian who's popping their head around the truck.
Right, right.
Until you get super close.
Yeah, a pedestrian standing next to a truck. We've done characterization using radar in some demonstrations we've done for General Motors and others, where we've taken and parked two cars together at a certain range and run a radar with and without our software. And then you kind of plot the points on where they show up. And without our software, this one radar was missing a good portion of the vehicle on the left. And so with our software, because basically what happens, if you think of it like you've got something very bright that's blue and something that's really small that's red, and they're in the same pixel, all you're going to see is the blue thing, right? And because you can't separate those out. And so we were actually pouring through lots of data and found that, like, oh my gosh, not only is this doing this increasing the spatial resolution, it's finding things that have been missed before. And we've demonstrated that against multiple, two vehicles together. We've demonstrated this against, and this is actually, Brandon, this is actually pretty, pretty interesting. We put a pedestrian next to a vehicle and they're both standing there, very much similar to like what you'd see on the side of a road. Without our software, it often missed the pedestrian. And then but with our software, it's able to break both of those out there. So what it does is it allows you to better estimate which areas in the scene are drivable and which ones aren't. And that is really critical for anything related to the higher levels of ADAS and autonomy.
And maybe clarifying, so I don't know if this came through in the way I was asking my questions, but until you clarified that, I was thinking about you're driving up to a scene and that the better resolution would make it so you, as from further away, you can make this distinction. But if I interpret this, like, sometimes at any distance, existing hardware is getting this wrong.
If you're closing in, eventually you'll get to a range where you'll separate things out, right? They'll eventually, if you're closing in on that red thing and that blue thing, eventually you get to the point where those will be in two separate pixels. But the range at which you're able to do that, from what we found in looking at some different radars, was not adequate for the types of driving decisions that you would want to be making. Gotcha. So you find out too late.
And how close can you get right now to, so you mentioned camera has better spatial resolution. I would assume LiDAR probably does than base radar as well. Like, how close can you get to those with your software?
Well, we make the radar better by a certain percent. So it really depends on how good the radar is to start with. I mean, we'll as much as I love talking about Spartan and talking about the technology, we're not going to be at camera level. Cameras are like 3,000 times, higher frequency. Cameras and lasers about, roughly the same area of order of magnitude. Like, lasers are like 3,000 times higher in frequency than us. So that just makes the equivalent spatial resolution that they would be able to get like 3,000 times better. So I'm not going to
level. You need to cross, right? Like, you're looking for good enough in all situations within a given use case, right?
Right. And that's exactly it. And what we're finding is that we can hit a very attractive price point and utility with a smaller, less expensive radar and our software than just going all in on a hardware only approach, that then those costs get passed on to customers, especially when you start thinking about autonomy for cars that you and I might drive. Those costs will get passed on to customers the day they take the car off the lot. And that's a lot. I mean, that would be fine for people that buy like a Mercedes EQS or something like that. But to hit those 43,000 lives, you can't just put stuff in Mercedes and BMW 7 Series and so forth. You need to put it in the Toyota Corolla, so that everybody can get this. And you're not going to get that with, really, really expensive lasers all around the vehicle. And you're not going to get that with expensive, even expensive imaging radars like I built at Waymo. You're not going to get those. You're not going to get with those all the way around the vehicle.
And are the use cases where this makes sense restricted to automated driving systems, or level four, if you want to use that? Or is there benefit in using this type of solution for something like a driver assist system or something like level two, three?
Yeah, I think that I think there's applications in the small and the lower levels of autonomy. But if you look at also where OEMs are wanting to go, they're wanting to have the hardware there so that when the software is ready for them to roll out increased autonomy, that it's that they're not hardware blocked at that point, that they can just add the software in. So I think that we're on the path towards it being, yeah. So I think it's going to be relevant now in some use cases, even for like AEB and ACC. But I think it becomes more and more, it buys its way on more and more with, well, it allows you to hit certain OEM specifications just with a lower price point, and then you can then pass those savings onto the customer. Yeah. So that's a value today. And then as the OEMs put in more and more autonomy, you'll start seeing that come through as well.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're future proofing, right, having hardware that's at a having hardware that's capable of that future state at a lower price point can result in cost savings today. Maybe one of the another potentially obvious question, but why is your software better than the radar company? Right? So like, obviously the radar companies are trying to have their radars perform as well as they could. And if they could optimize it, they'd rather take on that value creation rather than you guys. Like, why do you have a better solution?
I think that the experiences that my teams had doing really advanced radar things coming from my team comes from primarily two backgrounds. They come from the defense background, which obviously is solving really, really advanced, cool problems that we're probably not going to talk about on this podcast for some, you know, national security reasons. But they were doing really cool stuff. And so it's kind of the expertise there. And the other part of the other area where people come from is from the autonomy industry. So we've got kind of like a really powerful team. The team is not we're not the ones that have the deep supply chain contacts. We're not the ones that have we're producing at this, we built this one facility to produce our PCBAs. And that's, in after millions and millions of dollars of investment in that, that's not our gig. But we are really good at the algorithms and really good at the software. So whereas the radar, the historical tier ones, where do they make their money? They're selling hardware, right? They're selling hardware into OEMs. And so if they can make that hardware cheaper and still hit the specs, then that's a win for them. And it's a win for the OEM also. So I think that's where they've focused. Their R&D has been on interesting things, but often it's when push comes to shove, it's on making things that are where the hardware can be affordable and they can pass those savings on. They can keep some of those savings and pass some of those on to the OEMs and win competitions. We don't play in the hardware business for automotive. So we focus solely on making these really great algorithms and making them in a way that are lightweight enough that you can host them in the radar processor itself or inside the head somewhere, maybe not in the actual silicon of the transceiver, or in a central type compute application, whether it be a DSP or even a GPU. So we've got the whole gamut of ways to host our algorithms as well, as opposed to just some of the folks that were in the space a while back were very, very much they required really extensive compute capabilities for their algorithms to work. There's like a GPU or bust. If you don't have a GPU, it's just not going to work. And there's still some folks out there today, and that's interesting. They get decent performance, but there's a lack of applicability in some situations because not every vehicle, at least right now, is going to have that EV style central compute. Some still do stuff at the edge. So, and that's where we can fit in.
Yeah, it's really interesting business model. My mind's going a lot of different places. Like even in the relationship with the tier one hardware suppliers, I feel like that there must be elements of both collaboration and competition there, right? Of like if they have a hardware that they're selling for $10 and you can make it so that it works, like obviously just pulling numbers out of the air, it's not, no hardware radar is going for $10, but if you can make it so it works like one that goes for, you know, $50, $60, they can sell it to, and you guys collectively can sell it to the OEM, you can help them sell more radars. Like that's great. But a better solution is if they could create a better radar at a lower price point and they could capture all that value for them, at least financially, right? Like they would ideally like to be able to do all of this in-house so that they can grab the whole value chain. So like how does that play out? Do you have full collaboration of like the tier ones say, yeah, let's work with Spartan because we have a better product when we collaborate together, and this is outside this realm of where we want to focus anyway, so let's just do this and move on? Or do you also have some guarded relationships there?
So it's, there are some where we are very, very well entrenched, and there are some where it's predominantly, it's a not invented here syndrome, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. We don't need to sell through everyone. We need to sell through enough that win competitions to make this a very, very lucrative business still. So,
yep. Yeah, that feels like the right answer. So the,
what's the truth? So
yeah, I don't know if there's a better way to do it, right? You can't force people to work with you who don't want to. And also like, you don't need to work with everyone to build a great business. So and that actually transitions into like, how have you thought about making Spartan a robust, sustainable company from a business perspective? And shared a bit, but just for context, I do a lot of work in the autonomy space at Edison. We contract manufacture, we assemble autonomous vehicles regularly. Really like the industry. We're positioned to grow a lot as this industry grows. At the same time, I don't know when that's going to happen, what the scale is going to be. And there's a lot of examples of companies who have struggled to make this transition from R&D into production. And they've struggled. I mean, hardware production is part of it, which you guys aren't in that game. So that's great. But there's also, yeah, how do you position the company financially with the uncertainty in the industry?
Right. So that's a great question. That's one of the things I really like about what we're doing at Spartan is like, although we strongly believe in the automotive selling our software, which we use it under the brand name Clarify. It's all the software we're talking about, the eyeglasses for radar is another way we like to describe it. That's what we call Clarify. So as much as we believe in Clarify, we know automotive is a long sales cycle. So what we've done is we've addressed that second part of my of why I joined Spartan, which is like to look at the commercial vehicles, because in those, first of all, you can do a lot of things initially as aftermarket. And you might say aftermarket, that's, you know, no one does that anymore. Well, they don't do that on pass cars, but they do that in the commercial vehicles, because, and the whole ecosystem there is, you know, you have like bodybuilders and OEMs and bodybuilders and all these different, you know, and integrators and so forth. So it's not like you just go to the Ford dealer and buy a Mustang. There's like, you know, depending on whether it's a, you might get the body from the engine. So from this part, the body comes from somebody else to make a trash truck, right? Those are kind of like two parts that are separate or other fields also, this whole ecosystem of things. So aftermarket is one of the ways that we're starting to get in there. And we've developed a really robust distributor network to help us with that, as we started addressing some other things to move up the food chain, to basically get on fleets at the, you know, when they're built and integrated before they end up with the end customers. So, but the quick answer to all of that is like we are selling into commercial vehicles now and into the commercial vehicle space now. And that's super exciting because we're making a big dent. We will make a big dent in areas that have been predominantly neglected. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate. We just did a demonstration for a major retailer and in their warehouse. And we were putting our radars on material handling vehicles like forklifts. And it was really cool. We integrated it in actually even into the whole the actuation system, the forklift. So if the radar saw something that was getting close enough, it would actually cause the forklift to stop, so it wouldn't hit that thing, which is super cool. And I was like, yeah, this is a great technology. This is great. It's helping these people out. And they were like, oh wait, you don't get it. You know, in this very facility, we've had two people get killed within the last year. So yeah, this is it's not just like this can make things better. This can make things safer, and we can save lives, and we can start doing it right now. And that to me is super exciting. And it's a way to get the technology out there, to make a positive impact in our society. And then when you put your business guy hat on, it's a way that we can be generating revenue now while we're laying the groundwork, working with tier ones, working with OEMs for production deals in automotive. So it's this, we'll work this now and we'll continue to grow this. And this by the way, this part, the commercial vehicle part by itself can be a pretty exciting business. You know, when you start thinking like the number of those vehicles that are made and the TAM for that, that's not something to sneeze at. While we're still, continuing to press in the automotive area, which, can be in the future very, very large checks and a very sticky product. So
yeah, and I mean less impactful than saving lives, but I've heard some similar stories of like ground support equipment at airports, for example, of like you don't need to fully automate some of these things. Just having good stops in place, like you hear like, yeah, we scrap X number of airplane wings per year because someone drives into something. Like, there are huge dollars to be saved by just stopping the accidents. And then you can add on that with automation later. But yeah, there's value to be captured there for sure.
Absolutely. And when you think about that, not only is there money wasted, right? There's time wasted. So with all the people that went into building that wing that gets destroyed and goes to the junkyard now or whatever, all the people, that was a waste of their time because the product didn't live throughout its full life cycle. And then you start thinking like, okay, well now let's peel the onion back one more layer on what we've really allowed ourselves to be wasteful on. We've been wasteful not only on people's time and the production and manufacturing capability, we've been wasteful with our natural resources. So whenever you start thinking about climate issues and that whole sphere of things, it's more than just carbon offsets. It's more than just using less and recycling and reusing. It's also making sure that everything that we make lives through its full life cycle, because we're keep putting in things and, like you said, stop gaps that allow us to or stops along the way that allow us to keep these things safe. So mm-hmm. that to me is really exciting as well, because everything along that whole spectrum, like preventing waste of people's time, preventing waste of manufacturing resources, preventing waste of our natural resources, preventing waste, and then you think of like all the stuff that goes into, mining the aluminum, right? That goes into that. Well, now there's this extra, we're not wasting we're not putting extra pollutants into the atmosphere because of that. So it makes things so much better when everything that we build gets to go through its full life cycle and is not cut short prematurely.
No. Yeah, for sure. And I think last question in this vein. So you mentioned the transition from an R&D company to someone who has stuff in production, right? And I'd be interested to get your perspective on what has been the most important parts of that, maybe the biggest challenges or like the most important things to get right. And this is particularly interesting because often when I'm asking this question, it's manufacturing companies, it's hardware companies, and it's about, okay, manufacturing robustness and going through improving out your systems and stuff. We're not necessarily talking about that here. So within the realm that you're playing, what have been the most important aspects of that transition?
So the number one, so for the commercial vehicles, we actually do make hardware. There actually is a hardware product that has a Spartan name on it that's on vehicles now. So all the things that you mentioned, you have to find the CM, you have to negotiate with the CM, the contract manufacturer. You have to make sure that there's the stuff that's coming out of production meets your specifications. You have to do all the aspects of having a line and making sure that the quality is in there. The other thing you have to do is make sure that your sales team is set up with the collateral and the insights on how to sell this and how to highlight the features and show that it's not just a me too necessarily, but that we provide, actually not just features, but the advantages and benefits to the end customer and getting out of an R&D mindset and thinking like putting your customer's lens on. That's one of the things that I work a lot with my team on is to have us see through the eyes of the customer, right? Because at the end of the day, very, very few of our customers are really, radar zealots, right? At least not to the level that I am and not to the level like most of the folks on my team. We eat, drink, think, breathe radar, like, you know, every day. We're like that level of dork. But the customers aren't. They're not. They don't care whether, like, we use this exotic waveform or that exotic waveform or this way of pulling signals out of the noise or whatever. They don't care. They've got a problem, and they want it solved. So making sure that people see through the eyes of the customer, and then making sure that we understand the competition. You know, is there a situation where they're better going with somebody else's product? You know, there's not that many where that actually occurs, but sometimes it could be, and you want to be mindful of that so you can do the right thing by your customers. So really, you know, as you start to cross the chasm into revenue, it takes an entire mindset shift from R&D into, you know, really working to, you know, to hone that product market fit and to hone those relationships with customers and to really be solving their problems as opposed to promoting a widget with a bunch of features.
Any particular books or resources that you tend to point people toward to try to, maybe Crossing the Chasm is one of the,
Crossing the Chasm. when we think about, just running a company, I'm a huge fan of The Geek Way, which talks about, science and speed and openness and ownership is like kind of four key tenets to running a successful business. As a CEO, one of the books that it's tough to get through. I mean, it's tough to get through. It's Ben Horowitz's The Hard Thing About Hard Things, because he just goes through a series of like really monumentally sucky situations that he had to deal with as a CEO. And he provides like, this is what was going through my mind. This is what we ended up doing. This is why, I'll never trust this type of person again, or this is why I will trust this type of person again. And you see it through his lens. And that was a good, it's just tough because you're reading through it. It's like, wow, my situation is like really tough doing moving this whole company who's used to doing things a certain way into a different way of doing them that will ultimately make them much more successful. That's tough for me, but I was also then reading his thing. It's like, wow, it was pretty tough for him too doing the stuff that he was going through. So those are all good resources. I love to read this. I've got, I don't see the background behind me. I've got tons of books on there and almost all of them I've read. So
nice. Well, Matt, this has been a lot of fun. We really appreciate the perspective from, several different angles. And I appreciate too, I cut you off in several different things. So I'm glad we got around to the two different types of businesses and we were able to wrap that up with the passenger car and the commercial aspect. Appreciate the overview of Radar, what Spartan Radar is doing here, how you guys are growing the company, how you've thought about this. Did we miss anything? Or I guess if not, is there anything you're hoping that someone takes away from the conversation?
I think that when we think about radar, it's often in a negative context, right? You think about when we talk about radar, we either talk about it as it's something from like World War II, right? It's like, oh, radar is really old and it's not super exciting, whatever. Or it's like police radar, which is almost always bad because we all speed a little bit more than we should. So there's all these negative connotations that go along with radar. But really, radar is an extremely affordable, extremely useful sensing modality that makes cars today safer and better. I mean, not my car because my car's kind of old, but it makes new cars today safer and better. That as we roll out we're trying to do in the commercial vehicle space, it makes those safer and better. And it may not sound as sexy. It may not sound as sexy as like lasers, and so forth. But from a price point and a capability standpoint, it's really fantastic. So, for your listening audience, radar is cool too, even though it's typically not portrayed, that way. So.
Yeah, maybe building off of that, even startups and even companies that are taking big problems like autonomous vehicles have to care about cost eventually, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe not always taken as a given, but like cost matters for the product you're selling if you're going to scale it. And yeah, this is part of a potential solution to make autonomous or automated driving more cost conscious or cost feasible, I guess.
Yeah, because the lower the cost it is, the quicker the penetration you can get. And the quicker the penetration you can get, the quicker we can start saving lives.
Yeah, that's a good place to leave it. Well, Matt, thanks again. Really appreciate it, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, Brandon. It's a pleasure being on the show.
There you have it. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Matt Markle. So what stands out to me, a few things that come to mind. So the first is the importance of bill material cost for various assisted and automated driving solutions, right? So like these sensor suites are super expensive and they're cost prohibitive for a lot of applications. So something like what we're talking about here, which is getting the most out of cheaper, not cheap by any means, but compared to LiDAR sensors or some of the more expensive sensors, even top-end radar, right? Getting the most out of cheaper sensors, using software and processing on the back end to get the performance past the level of what you need for good enough. Seems to be, I mean, I'm not an expert here, but I don't know, it seems to be a lot of merit to that idea of how do you define and deploy a sensor suite that's good enough for your application, right? Because you're not striving for perfection, you're striving for good enough for what you need it to do. How do you define a sensor suite and utilize it in a cost-effective manner? And yeah, I think there's a lot of merit there, especially given the commercial challenges that autonomy rollout have had. Also mentioned at the beginning, it's really interesting to hear how he thinks about diversifying Spartan while staying focused and also making money, right, while they go after this autonomy space that's so growing and really, really hasn't launched to the extent that you might expect. And it's really tough to be ready to take advantage of that market when it takes off while also not exposing yourself too soon. And besides that, like I said at the beginning, like the radar, I think, is a, kind of taken for granted, right? It's not a super sexy technology, especially compared to LiDAR. But a lot of merit here. There's a lot of things that can do well, especially in conjunction with vision systems or cameras, like mentioned. And I think, I don't know, I had a lot of fun. Glad to have Matt on the show. Hope you learned something. As always, really appreciate you listening. And there's more to come next week.
Thank you for listening to the Future of the Week. Thank you.